Were you in stasis?
Yeah.
Were you in a cryo tank? Did you sleep through it? You've been here the whole time, sir.
Welcome to 10 Cent Takes, the show where we always read comics in our comfiest clothes and have five drinks within arm's reach, one issue at a time.
That's way too relatable as I hold up my two beverages.
Yeah, I was going to say, let's not talk about how many sodas I have on my desk right now. My name is Mike Thompson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, the mysterious Macrameyor. Is that a word?
I think so.
Yeah, sure.
It's got to be a verb.
Yeah, the mysterious Macrameyor Jessica Frazier. Hello.
Oh, well, hello. I did have to move one of my macrame projects in order to get this lovely, cozy, comforted fort set up.
Excellent. If you are new to the show, our main episodes drop every other week and provide in-depth looks into interesting moments in comic books and how they tie into both pop culture and history. But today is one of our Dollar Bin Discoveries mini-episodes that we do in between those deep dives. We spend a lot of time reading through dollar bins of local shops, looking at interesting stuff. But while a lot of the issues that we find are fun and weird, they may not be enough for us to do a deep dive on. That's at the moment. We always reserve the right to change our mind later and come back. Each episode features both of us talking about one random issue that we come across in the dollar bins, one that fits a theme that one of us chose. Today's theme is cozy core, however you want to define it. In these episodes, we talk about what the book is, what goes on inside it, and why it's interesting. Effectively, these are mini episodes that are meant to provide you with some weekly content between our more in-depth discussions about the weirder and more interesting moments of comic book history. So, Jessica, what is your cozy core book tonight?
Well, if you know me, you know that I may look pretty cozy and I may dress pretty cozy a lot of the time, but I don't have like a ton of cozy content.
I had the
I'm
same
more
problem.
Of like a horror,
yeah,
action, drama kind of a person. But something I did find in my collection, and I'll tell you why this is a little bit of a cheat, but
okay,
it's Star Wars Ewoks number one. It's a one shot.
Okay.
Published by Marvel in June of 2023. I say it's a little, this may be a cheat because I may have pulled this off of the shelves rather than the dollar bins.
Yeah, it's close
when I was at Outer Planes. But to be fair, it is from last year, so it will be in the discount bins at some point, you know, soon, if it isn't already. So this was written by Alyssa Wong. Artists were Lee Garbett and Java Tartaglia, Paulina Ganuchow, Kyle Hotz, Rochelle Rosenberg, Casper Wungard. Letterer was VC's Joe Carmagna. Designer was Carlos Lau. Assistant editor was Mikey J. Basso. Editor was Danny Kazem. Senior editor was Mark Paniccia. Editor-in-chief was C.B. Sibolsky. The Lucasfilm staff included senior editor Robert Simpson, creative director Michael Siglin, art director Troy Alders. Story group was Matt Martin, Pablo Hidalgo, and Emily Shukukani. Creative art manager was Phil Sostek.
Man, like, there are so many cooks in that kitchen.
Ugh, man, it took me a while to write all that, too.
It's funny because I had a friend who, he worked on the LucasArts side of things back when LucasArts was still a thing. And
yeah,
holy shit, like we talked about some of the approval stuff for like narrative collaborations and things like that. It was the most bonkers, convoluted system that I'd ever heard of.
That does not surprise me when you get into something as large as the Star Wars franchise is at this point.
Right. Well, and this was before they had been bought by Disney, too. And so at that point in time, they had like decades worth of content and all of it was canon. Like every single thing. So it was like, oh, this one piece of like lore from this one episode or this one book, like one of the hundreds of novels. It's like, this is a thing that we have to take into account when we're dealing with all this new stuff. And you're like, all right.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. I love all of that. I think that's very fascinating. So this Ewoks comic, this was an anthology comic, and it had no dialogue.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah, because, you know, because the Ewoks.
Yeah.
So it's following different members of the Ewok village telling bedtime stories to the children while they're all sitting around a fire. So the first story is called The Walkling's Tale, okay. And it's more in like a chibi style.
Okay.
It's about one of the younger Ewoks who wanted to go out and explore, imagining only good things could come. The parents, however, were super worried. They tried to explain that there might be danger, but the Walkling went out with his horse anyway. They found some treats, and then they came to a part of the forest that looked really dark and scary. And they found a cave with someone inside. And it was a member of the rival species, but she was really fun and nice. And she was making flower chains.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know who they are. I didn't do any research. I probably should have. But it was just like they're green. They kind of look, honestly, they kind of look like the Grinch.
Okay.
But she's in there. She's just having herself a good old time. She's making herself like flower crowns and stuff. And so they just decide to start playing together. They become friends, despite both of their respective parents warning about how dangerous the others are.
Mm-hmm.
So one day while playing together, the parents both arrived at the cave and started arguing. But the kids stood their ground that there was no fighting allowed in the friendship cave.
Good.
And the parents looked around and realized that they might have more in common than they thought. And they all sat down to have some snacks in harmony. And they're all wearing flower crowns.
That's really...
Yeah, it was really sweet. The next story is called Poplu's Tale. And it's in a dark horror style. And it's a scary one about an Ewok who's walking through a dark forest and he comes across the body of another Ewok, but he's not sure what caused his demise. He gets deeper into the forest and he sees all of these bones of other Ewoks in a large pit. And then he sees a monster and it's huge and it's coming after him. So he makes a run for it and he tries to fight back, but all of his efforts are in vain as the monster picks up the Ewok and chomps him down with his big, sharp teeth. And on the next page, one of the elders bonks Poplu on the head for telling such a scary story to the Walklings. It's really cute.
I was like, damn, this sounds intense.
I know, it was intense. He's like, hey, donk. The last story is called Peekpaw's Tale, and it's in a soft, sketchy watercolor style. And this one's about one of the Ewoks setting a trap for and clotheslining a scout trooper. The man was still alive, but the Ewok bonked him on the head and stole his shit, bringing it back to his own hobbled craft that he had been building. All of the other Ewoks were making fun of him, but he dreamed of flying into the stars. Then one day, when the others were looking on with disdain, he is able to fire up the ship and he takes off into the sky with a smile. So, at the end, the Walklings are yawning, and the elders lead them to their beds, with the Walkling first putting on a flower crown, then threatening their shadow with a spear, and then going to sleep cradling a model of a spaceship.
Aww.
It was so cute! It was such a cute comic. I loved that it was all action and no words. They were able to convey these really detailed stories without any verbiage at all, which is always really impressive to me. And I liked that each of the stories had their own style. And I like that they showed small frames. They did this cool thing where they showed small frames of different listeners' reactions in the corners of some of the stories sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah. And the Ewoks, I don't know if listeners know that, but they are my favorite. I used to be / still am obsessed with the Ewoks and the Ewoks movies.
Yeah.
I used to watch those all the time. I wanted to be that little girl.
I think the Ewoks hold a real special place for kids that grew up with that. Like,
I
loved the Ewoks as a kid. And my parents were like, yeah, we weren't as into it. But, like, you know, like, the kids really loved it. And I was like,
yeah. And then they had that TV show. And I only saw a little bit of that. But I was still familiar with it. It still, you know, holds a special place in my heart.
Oh, the other one that I remember is there was like two movies. And like
there were two movies.
One of them is decidedly better than the other. The other one is like weird fantasy. Oh, it's weird. Anyway.
Listen, I probably like the weird fantasy horror one more than I like the other one, which is even funnier.
I mean, that checks out.
It does check out. So I would absolutely recommend this comic for anyone, literally anyone. It had elements that I think everyone would enjoy. And you didn't have to know too much about the overall Star Wars universe to figure out what was going on. So I think it would also be really friendly to readers who are new to the franchise.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Well, what about you, Mike?
I am talking about Superman Meets the Quick Bunny.
The Quick Bunny?
The Quick Bunny. Like, remember the Quick Bunny? The Nesquik
Bunny? Yeah, like Nestle Quick.
Yeah. So this wasn't quite a dollar bin discovery. It was one of several comics that Sarah stuffed in my stocking this year for Christmas.
But we both cheated this week.
We both cheated a little bit, so it's
That's
fine.
Okay. We make up the rules, people. This is our goddamn podcast.
We can bend and break them when we want to. So this was released in 1987 by DC Comics. It was written by Mike Carlin, penciled by Carmine Infantino, inked by Dick Giordano, colored by Liz Berube, and lettered by John Costanza. So we open up on Metropolis, where a sunny day has suddenly been disrupted by a freak storm and flash floods. Superman swoops in to rescue a kid and his cat while a news crew films him. And meanwhile, in the Metropolis suburbs, friends Miguel, Maureen, Ronnie, and Patty are building a treehouse with the help of the Quick Bunny, which they have named the Quick Club, spelled with Q's. And also, we should note that Quick is always spelled Q-U-I-K. Like, you know, it's some real strong branding.
Here's the thing. What I see, because I'm seeing the Quick Club written down right here,
so
it looks like it says Quick Q-Lub. Like, yeah, that's how my brain wants to read it, because where the hell is the rest of it? It just says Q-L-U-B.
It's
like
bad.
There's no qua. There's no qua. I don't know, man.
So also we should note that this is like the nicest looking treehouse that anyone has ever seen. Not only does it have multiple levels of stairs, like, and it also looks like kind of like prime 1970s, 80s architecture. Like, it's sort of an A-frame. It's beautiful. But it's also super high tech inside and comes fully stocked with tons of Nestle Quick. The group sits down to watch cartoons, but instead they see footage of the storm and Superman saving citizens. The Quick Bunny says that they should help him because each kid has special talents. Ronnie is great at geography. Patty is a master of, quote, science.
Oh, my God.
The exact words are, quote, you're in the science club at school. And
I'm like, Jesus Christ.
Miguel is a linguistics and communications expert, and Maureen is a computer whiz. And then the group
goes. I'm sorry, how old are these children?
They look like they're maybe 10. Maybe.
Okay. Yeah. Apparently he pulled them out of the special and gifted school for
So the group goes to their various stations and a propeller pops out of the top and a jet on the bottom. And the clubhouse suddenly becomes the Quick Copter, also spelled with a Q.
No!
To fly them towards Metropolis. Meanwhile, we see the Weather Wizard is secretly behind the storms in the city. The villain sends lightning after Superman, and there's an activity page where readers have to help Superman fly through a Metropolis-themed maze to evade the bolts. Back to the Quick Copter, the group has fed information into their computer to figure out what's going on. The printout is scrambled, so Miguel deciphers the puzzle, which we get at the bottom of the page. Basically, you just unscramble the kids' names, and then the highlighted letters spell out Weather Wizard. The team tells Superman over their loudspeakers that the Weather Wizard is responsible for this chaos. The Weather Wizard freezes Superman into a big block of ice, but the clubhouse has a giant mechanical arm that catches him as he's falling, and then Superman breaks out of the ice. Clark thanks the kids for their help, but laments about the villain getting away, and then Miguel goes, oh, he mentioned that he's going to capitalize on the situation, which clearly means he's headed to Washington, D.C. Like,
obviously.
Superman, again, thanks the team and flies off. The Quick Bunny says that the team should help the Man of Steel again, but the copter wouldn't be able to take them that far. And Patty says, who says that we have to take the copter, and pushes a button, and then the thing turns into like a hot air balloon?
What? What a fever dream.
Yeah. And also, like, I should note, Metropolis is actually like really close to Washington, D.C., like actually like in the canonical maps. It's like in Delaware.
Oh. Oh, OK.
Yeah. Ooh. Anyway, I don't know like how far they were imagining it was going to be for a trip. I'm like, but this should be doable in a helicopter. But OK. So now we're in D.C. and Superman's arrived just in time for a tornado to hit. As he blinks, a bunch of objects on the street disappear, and then we get another activity where we're tasked with listing all of the missing items, which are all flying through the tornado to pummel Big Blue. The Washington Monument starts to topple from the tornado, Superman manages to stop it from falling, and the Quick Club then arrives just in time for their clubhouse to get sucked into the tornado, but it's not actually a big deal because they know that they'll be safe in the center of the storm, and that's where the Weather Wizard probably is.
Probably.
There's another puzzle activity tied to this. The kids find the villain, and then the Quick Bunny distracts the Weather Wizard, and that causes the tornado to vanish. The Weather Wizard flies away, saying that he's headed to Egypt in order to regroup. Why? I don't know. He is. And unsurprisingly, everyone goes after him. Superman flies off, and then Patty basically announces that they're rejiggering the clubhouse to become a jet plane. So, you know, whatever. So the club gets to Egypt, and Miguel actually ends up acting as a translator. We get another activity for this sequence. Whatever. A snowstorm suddenly appears just as the group heads towards a pyramid where they find Superman fighting a mummy. The Quick Bunny saves Superman by unraveling the mummy, and then it's revealed that the mummy worked for the Weather Wizard, who is hiding inside the pyramid. Superman literally tears the pyramid apart. I can't even with this. I'm like... And he's ripping it out. And the thing is it's like, remember how like pyramids are like mostly solid?
Yes.
You know, the interior space is not that big. It's like, okay.
No.
So anyway, so Superman literally tears a hole and it's just this big hollow space inside. Okay. He confronts the Weather Wizard, but he returns the weather to normal and the melting snow causes a tidal wave. And Superman has to rescue the kids while the wizard flies off to China. There's another geographic puzzle, and then both groups go off to China. What? So the club's jet gets knocked out of the sky by a hailstorm, and it transforms into a boat so they can ride the Yangtze River. We get another maze. This time the kids have to navigate, and then we come across Superman protecting the Great Wall from a hailstorm. The club starts talking, and the bunny freaks out because he can't figure out how to stop the wizard permanently. The kids give him a glass of Nestle Quick, and it's like Popeye spinach for the brain, and he announces that he now knows what he needs to do. And during the ensuing battle between Superman and the Weather Wizard, the villain spots the Quick Bunny silhouette and then tries to blast it with lightning. However, it turns out it was actually a metallic decoy that redirects the lightning back at him, which your face was kind of mine when I was reading it.
Like, what is going on? What a fucking fever dream of a comic.
I don't think that's how this works. I don't think that's how science works.
This comic could have stopped so many times already.
I know. And anyway, so the lightning is reflected back at the Weather Wizard, which gives Superman the opportunity to finally capture him. And then the final scene is the kids, the rabbit, and Superman all drinking Nesquik back at the Quick Club, which is return to its original location and treehouse form. And like, I picked this book out because I was like, oh, it's a Nesquik comic. I loved Nesquik as a kid.
Yeah.
So I actually made myself like a mug of chocolate milk. And I read this one night last week during our latest round of like storms that we had coming through the Bay Area. And my final verdict is that it's cozy with a Q. Like, it's very shallow. It's very silly. I don't know. The art's solid. I liked that the kids group is actually pretty diverse, but this was like less cozy and more frantic and breathless. And when I was telling Sarah about it, she pointed out like Ovaltine is actually the cozy chocolate mix, not Nesquik. So, you know, that was my mistake.
That's fair.
Yeah, it's kind of weird overall. There's a lot of passive product placement. Like, you see a lot of Nesquik stuff in the background, but there's not nearly as much drinking of Nesquik as I would have expected. Huh. I will say that I did get a little grumpy because like everything was spelled with a Q, and I was just like,
no, I hate
fucking
it.
Done with it at that point. So
no, I hate it. I was done with it once you kept like, I was like done with it. Like the first time you said the code, like the freaking Q Club, I was like, stop, just full stop.
Like the Google Doc for this episode is so full of like, are you sure you meant to spell it that way? Highlights.
Oh my God. Real talk.
Yeah. Well, anyway, that is our episode for today. We will be back next week with another deep dive into something. I don't know what. We're recording these all out of order. But until then, stay safe out there, and we will see you in the stacks. Thanks for listening to 10 Cent Takes. Accessibility is important to us, so text transcriptions of each of our published episodes can be found on our website.
This episode was hosted by Jessica Fraser and Mike Thompson, written by Jessica Fraser and edited by Mike Thompson. Our intro theme was written and performed by Jared Emerson Johnson of Bay Area Sound. Our credits and transition music is Pursuit of Life by Evan MacDonald and was purchased with a standard license from Premium Beat. Our banner graphics were designed by Sarah Frank, who's at lookmomdraws.com.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, ask us questions, or tell us about how we got something wrong, please head over to 10centtakes.com or shoot an email to 10centtakes@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter for now. The official podcast account is 10 Takes, all one word. Jessica is Jessica with a, and Jessica is spelled with a K. And Mike is Vansau, V-A-N-S-A-U. You can also find us on Instagram, Mastodon, Facebook, TikTok, and Blue Sky. A full list of our socials will be listed in the show notes.
You can also send us mail now. We are at P.O. Box 940 in Pen Grove, California, 94951. And Pen Grove is spelled P-E-N-N-G-R-O-V-E.
Send us stuff.
If you'd like to support us, be sure to download, rate, and review wherever you listen.
Stay safe out there.
And support your local comic shop.